T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Good morning, baseball fans. It is indeed Inside the Clubhouse right here on The Score. Bruce Levine is your man. I am Matt Spiegel. We have a couple guests in a short show, so we got to talk fast. Ned Coletti, the Dodgers GM, former Dodgers GM, now pre and post for the Dodgers Radio Network, will join us at 10. And Ryan Dempster of the Cubs and MLB Network in just a couple of minutes, Bruce.
Absolutely, Matt. Playoff baseball is king right now. A game 7, what's more compelling than that in sports, and in particular baseball tonight? Brewers and the Dodgers playing for the National League pennant tonight. And by the way, Matt, Inside the Clubhouse brought to you by our friends at Max and Benny's in Northbrook. It's your fall home for the best food in Chicagoland. Checklist: best deli, yes. The best full restaurant, yes. The best bakery on the North Shore, indeed. Max and Benny's dinners from 4 to 9 p.m. feature full meals of roast beef, chicken, and the freshest whitefish and salmon in the city. Bakery goods to die for includes sugar cookies, mandel bread, homemade bagels, bialys, rye bread, challah at maxandbennys.com. Private party room and business meeting area seats 10 to 150. Catering is king at Max and Benny's. Ask for John at maxandbennys.com. 30 minutes from downtown, 30 minutes from the Wisconsin border. Love you some maxandbennys.com in Northbrook. And a nice win for the Brewers yesterday to make it a game 7. Everybody was counting Brewers out, looking at Dodgers in Boston. And guess what happened? Brewers actually won without using their number one weapon. Hader stays on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
The offense comes up big with 4 runs early, and they hold on to it with a great bullpen work. As usual, a starter that goes 4 innings, that's quite enough, as we see in all these playoff games right now, Matt, and more compelling baseball tonight.
Yes, the Red Sox loom on Tuesday. They'll host Game 1 Tuesday with Chris Sale, Game 2 on Wednesday with David Price. But interesting to see and then hear Dave Roberts take the long view. And by that, I mean 2 days, Game 6 and Game 7, and leaving Hyun-Jin Ryu in there as he was getting a hit around, and afterward he said he was thinking about Game 7. That's not the way the game is managed these days. Usually it's just get me 27 outs today, and I don't care what I have left for tomorrow. We'll figure it out then. But Roberts took the long view. He's got Walker Buehler and a fairly well-rested bullpen for the most part, the important guys coming up
tonight. And
you and
I were talking off the air how the long view now is somebody pitches 2 innings and they've been in there too long.
Right, this was two outs last night. Get Ryu out of there.
3rd inning and get that starter out. What the hell is wrong with you? You know, why are you leaving your starter in when it's a bullpen game in 2018?
Yes.
And such is the case, especially in the playoffs. And nothing resonates more than what we saw in Game 5 with manager Craig Counsell actually bringing in a starting pitcher for only the first batter.
Yeah, Wade Miley for 1 hitter, and then they giggled. They all giggled as Dave Roberts' lineup was forced to then face righty Brandon Woodruff, and he was good for 5 1/3. It's Inside the Clubhouse. I'm Matt Spiegel. He is Bruce Levine, and we've got a guest to kick things
off.
We
do. From MLB Network, from the Chicago Cubs, from the heart of Chicago Cub fans forever, Ryan Dempster joins us on Inside the Clubhouse. Good morning, Ryan.
Morning, Bruce, Matt. How we doing, Bill?
We're doing great. Hey, first of all, the evolving changes in baseball and you as a quality starting pitcher looking at the changes and knowing that Lou Piniella managing in 2018 with Ryan Dempster on the mound would say, hey, give us your best 2 innings and you're out of there.
Yeah, it sure is. It sure is changing. I understand it, I guess, from a standpoint of when you don't have good quality starting pitching, but you need to have that in order, to get an opportunity. And, you know, even look at the Brewers. Everybody talks about their bullpen, but But look at their starting pitching ERA during this. CS has been, I think, under a 2. They've gotten that because you need that good start. And, you know, you could say the reliever incident on game 5, but we all know that Woodruff, you know, who was a starting pitcher in the minor leagues, he went out there and threw five really great innings for them, and they tried to take it an extra inning. And but it's just crazy how the game is changing that way. Some teams still believe in, you know, the value of keeping your starting pitcher out there, and some teams go to the bullpen right away. And you know, it doesn't always work out, but nowadays these guys, it seems like everybody that comes in out of the bullpen throwing close to, you know, the mid to upper 90s or has a nasty breaking ball. You know, there's a lot of dynamics. So the Brewers have kind of what the Royals had when they won the World Series and went on that 2-year trip to the World Series back-to-back years with that lights-out bullpen and those few guys they have down there. So I'm looking forward to tonight. That place is going to be loud. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch that game and see what happens.
Ryan, it's always been kind of fluid in the postseason, and some teams are ahead of others. I'll never forget, nor will a lot of others, seeing Josh Beckett, Carl Pavano, and Dontrell Willis in relief from Jack McKeon, right? And then Dusty Baker would use relievers like Dave Veers and stuff like that. But, you know, as I look at it now, it's interesting. If you're a starter, you have to be ready to be fluid too. Look in Boston, Nate Eovaldi and Rick Porcello have been like super starters of a sort. You start, but also a couple days later, come in and throw an inning or maybe more, and it expands the quality of your bullpen. How do you prepare as a pitcher to be that guy, to be like what Nate Eovaldi has had to be in this series?
Yeah, I think, well, that's exactly it. It's just the preparation and conversation. I think communication's huge. If you know that going in, and it's, you know, listen, when you're wearing that uniform and you're out there playing those games, you want to do that. I mean, the good guys do. The ones who really want the ball, they want to, yeah, sure, I'll throw in the bullpen on my side day if you need me for an inning or two innings or whatever it ends up being, because you only get so many chances in the postseason. You only need 11 wins, and then I can rest my arm all offseason, all I want. And as long as I'm healthy and I'm going well, adrenaline kicks in. You see it all the time. You see guys who, you know, pitch on a Saturday and then throw in the All-Star game, and they're throwing their hardest velocity. Why? Because adrenaline's up. You're facing the best players in the game. So these guys, I don't think it's as big of an issue. And why are they starting pitchers? Because they usually are the best pitchers on the team. Aside from, like, the closer, they're usually the best pitchers on the team. That's why they're starters. And so if you only have to throw an inning or two, you can unload the tank right there, not have to hold anything back for later in the game. You know, in 13, we won with the Red Sox. John Lackey came out of the bullpen in the 8th inning in St. Louis and got that to our closer, Koji Uehara. I've seen it. Chris Sale came in against the Yankees in the first round. You see it where these guys come in, and all of a sudden, A, the other offense isn't ready for it, and B, it's just a shutdown dynamic and can give a little bit of a breather to a reliever who might have been used a lot. And what Eovaldi did the other night, it's fun to watch when you see a starting pitcher come in, you know, a few days after a start and come in there and just be lights out. It's awesome.
Ryan Dempster joins us and Inside the Clubhouse. He's Mad. I'm Bruce. We're here for you every Saturday talking baseball, 52 weeks out of the year on the Score. Ryan, when you, you've seen in periphery, you've lived it personally, being around the Cubs an awful lot. You see with the Joe Maddon situation this week, Alan Nero, his agent, came out and came on the Score, talked to the Tribune as well, talking about how Joe does not worry about being a lame duck manager with 1 year left, and that he is going to sit down, meaning the agent will sit down with Theo when Theo thinks it's the right time. Otherwise, they're willing to sit and wait and not worry about it. From the way you have dealt with baseball as a player and what you saw during your 17-year career, and now when you see as an analyst, how important is that last year for the manager to have the hammer, to not be looked at as a lame duck going in, even with the resume and the, you know, everything else that Joe Maddon brings to the table?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I mean, I think it was Sparky Anderson who said it a long time ago. He said, "You give me 25 guys with a 1 year contract, I'll win a World Series for you."
Right.
And I think that holds a lot of truth. I think there are guys who have years in their free agent year that don't do very well, and there's guys who thrive in that because there's a lot of money to be made out there in free agency and a lot of opportunity to showcase your talents to whoever they are. And if there's one thing I know about Joe from being around him, it's that he's not going to let that stress him out at all. He's going to go about his business and just do what he needs to do. And at the end of the day, that's try and lead the Cubs back to another World Series. And he's proven capable of that. He's proven as a winning manager. And I think Theo knows that, and they'll take care of whatever they have to take care of. But, you know, Joe's not going to stress about that. He's going to go out there and manage to win ball games. And, you know, I felt like being a free agent was kind of fun going through that season where a couple different times where you know that if I perform really well, that I can be taken care of. And I think that's how the game should be. The game should be that way across the board. I understand guaranteed contracts, and that's great, but why not a little extra incentive? Hey, you know, I'm guaranteed money, so I don't have to perform. I think that's tough sometimes, especially with the way the contracts are. Why not have a little incentive and a little drive? So whatever ends up happening, I'm sure will be the best thing. He's been nothing but a great manager since he's been here, and I don't expect anything less next year.
With 95 wins and four playoffs in a row, it's quite a resume, but is it possible that some guys coming in might have taken the freedom that Joe gives them as far as, hey, you don't have to take BP today if you don't want to. It's always optional for the Chicago Cubs. Is it possible that, you know, maybe somebody came in and was just not responding well to the autonomy that Joe gives them within their day's work?
If that's the case, I don't think that's on Joe. I think that's on the clubhouse. You know, I think I don't know if they did or didn't, but right. You know, that's where the veteran guys need to step up and be like, hey, listen, I know that you're a rookie or you're a young guy and, you know, you had a great year last year, but like that's last year. And I think that's a really hard thing sometimes for young guys to remember is, you know, success last year doesn't guarantee you success this year. Usually just guarantees you a spot on the team to start the season. That's all it does. So you got to go out there and perform. And if you're not doing the work you need to do, then that's on the veteran guys to tell those guys, hey, man, come on, let's go. Let's get to the batting cage. Let's go run laps. Let's go run pulls. Let's throw a flat ground. Whatever you need to do to have success. And, you know, the manager gives you that freedom. You know, it's like the old, you know, don't confuse my kindness for weakness. Right. Make sure you're doing what you need to do and prepare. And, you know, that's where young guys, I think if you look around the locker room, I always told young guys when they come to spring training, I said, you know, come do me a favor, come at 6 o'clock in the morning and go in the weight room and go look at all the guys that are working in the weight room. And when you come to spring training next year, those same guys are going to be the guys that are in the weight room. And then next year and then next year, because they're working hard and, you know, we can see the fun, relaxed atmosphere, but that you get that relaxed atmosphere, you get that fun because you're successful, and you get that success because you put the hard work in before anybody ever sees it.
He's Ryan Dempster, and this is Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and me, Matt Spiegel. Ryan, I thought of you as I read about Anthony Iaposi, especially with the way Jason McLeod described him, said he is, quote, crazy, but it's good crazy. You know, and it's like, I mean, don't take offense. I don't think you would that I thought of you, but it's like you need guys like that. And I can't help but think when Theo was talking about the edge that this team didn't have every day, just bringing it every day. And then you read about Iaposi's philosophy of winning every pitch and just his intensity. It seems like, you know, the approach, obviously, and the philosophy is a huge part of why he was hired. But how important is his particular brand of good crazy for what the Cubs might need in that clubhouse?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think, you know, whether it's you become content or you just expect to be there at the end because you're talented and then you are there at the end and it just reaffirms that to you, you know, can sometimes be a bit of a bad thing. And I like what you said about winning every pitch. You know, we see it all the time. We've talked about it. You guys, I'm sure, have talked about it. Theo's talked about it. You know, Joe, players, you know, we sit there and look, oh, a game 163, and if we just would have won the last game, you know, you'd be – well, what about games in April and May and June and July? Those all matter too. And so if you can take that approach, and it's so hard to do over 162 games, it's not as easy as people just think, oh, it's Major League Baseball, you should be focused every game. Really? It's 162 days, like with very little days off. It's hard to have that. So the more you can have people around you providing that and reminding you, like, don't take something for granted. Don't ever just think it's going to happen because you just think it's going to happen. You got to make it happen. You know, we still always talk about don't talk about it, be about it. And that's a really huge thing. And understanding that, and I think having that philosophy is a great thing to have a guy in your corner, that's going to work his tail off with you, but approach it that way is a really, really huge attribute to have and to be able to add to a staff and looking forward to things that he can do for the Cubs because he obviously had great results in Texas with those guys and has a great attitude and a guy who really, really wants the best out of the players.
You know what it's like to be on a team with guys like John Lackey, right? Or guys like David Ross, guys who bring that kind of energy that I think Theo was talking about. I suspect they're going to try and find a guy or two like that to bring in as players in addition to the Iaposi injection. Do you think that's accurate?
Well, I think that Theo's obviously going to try and inject as much energy and life into the team once again, like they always do. You know, they're tireless, man. They work so hard to try and put the best team on the field, the best group of guys in order to succeed. And I think, you know, when you lose guys like that, it matters. How much it matters, I don't know. But, you know, I've been around it. I've watched in Boston, Dustin Pedroia yell at David Ortiz in the dugout in front of everybody for not running down to first base. Now, here's David Ortiz. This is in 2013. He's already won two World Series, and he yells at him that there's kids in the stands, and can he at least get his butt to first base? Now you want to talk about accountability?
Right.
First of all, I thought we were going to have a fight. And second of all, all David Ortiz just says is, okay, Petey, I got you. My bad, man.
Yeah.
And now I look over at John Farrell, who's the manager, and I just said, man, it's really nice to not have to manage the clubhouse one bit. Huh? We got it. And that's guys like David Ross, John Lackey. You can talk about Lackey all you want, you know, his ornery old self out there yelling at the umpires. But accountability, holding guys accountable and pushing them to be better. What's so wrong with giving a guy a kick in the butt and saying, you're better than that. Show us you're better than that because we know it. And I think that's just a huge thing that you can have on any team. You look around the league, there's guys doing it. Milwaukee has Eric Kratz. They have Stephen Voit on the bench that doesn't play and is that impact type guy in the clubhouse that's keeping those guys and the pressure on them to go out there and succeed.
We're up against a break. We appreciate your coming on. Congratulations on the new addition. Isabella Vivian Dempster, you and Kelly, congratulations to both of you on the new baby. I know it's another treasure for you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting off the phone here and going and grabbing a bottle and snuggling up with that little angel. So
a bottle
so
for her, a bottle yeah, for yeah, her, yeah, not yeah, a bottle yeah, for yeah, you.
Yeah,
right?
No, sorry. Yeah, let me clarify that. I do not drink bottles of wine first thing in the morning.
Right,
I wait
call.
Till 11.
In closing with you, one more thing, Demp. Has a coach for you ever attributed to a win or a loss or an effort on your part? And how much emphasis should we put on changing of coaches, getting a better effort?
Yeah, I think there can be disconnects between, you know, a pitching coach and a player. You know, I think that a coach can have a direct impact on a player and their success. You know, and I think that's just sometimes we want to focus on the coach that didn't get it done, but sometimes there are coaches that really find a way to make a difference, to really, really make a difference. You know, I had a couple different pitching coaches who along the way, you know, were really, really impactful with me. Larry Rothschild was tremendous. Brad Arnsberg was a pitching coach I had that changed my career a little bit. I hit Javier Vasquez in the head in Montreal when I was with the Florida Marlins. He was a pitching coach in the minor leagues with me. He happened to be a coach with the Expos, and he called me after the game. I was distraught. I was miserable. I felt like I'd hurt this kid, you know, a competitor, a guy I'd been playing against. He called me up. He said, meet me after the game. He took me out for a beer, and he talked me through it, you know, and that could have went one of two ways. I could have been afraid to pitch inside the rest of my career, and maybe I wouldn't have been successful, and I would have had a six-year career instead of a 16-year one. So it really can make a difference, and these guys are mentors, and They're friends at times, they're motivators at times, and they're coaches at times. And, you know, good coaches can really go a long way.
Hey, Ryan, thank you. By the way, great to see you at your Off the Mound event. I hope you do that more. That was really good at the Vic. You're talented at that, man. Keep doing it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that'll happen again for sure, but I appreciate that. And it was a great night. We raised just over $70,000 for CPS Score, which is a tremendous night. So it was a lot of fun, a lot of laughs. And for anybody who missed it, it'll be going out there on the internet. And the Sean Casey alone was worth the price of admission, that's for sure. So you have to see that interview of Sean Casey and I sitting there talking, and a lot of fun night, a lot of fun laughs, and great guys up there, and something I enjoyed doing. So I was glad you were there to watch it all. It was a lot of fun.
Congrats to you and Kelly again. Thanks for joining us as usual. Keep up the great work. Take care.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
All right. Ryan Dempster joining us in Inside the Clubhouse. We're late for a break. More talk, Sox, Cubs, everything baseball. Ned Coletti at the top of the next hour talking about that playoff situation. Everything you want baseball-wise here at 312-644-6767.
It's Inside the Clubhouse. We're right back with you on 670 The Score. This hour of 670 The Score is brought to you by Mancari Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram on 95th Street in Oak Lawn. Bruce Levine on Inside the Clubhouse with me, Matt Spiegel.
Yes, sir. And we talk Chicago baseball, everything baseball here, and we talk it with you at 312-644-6767. Text Matt at 670-11. He'll read all that is worthy to air, which is a wide spectrum here on The Score. Well, this is men's talk at its very best. We enjoy the women joining us as well. But, you know, pull up a bar stool. That's what we're all about here at The Score.
So Anthony Iaposi is here. We talked about the good crazy with Ryan Dempster that he brings as the hitting coach. There's also this. This is a quote about his hitting philosophy. Bruce, it reminds me of the conversation we had last week, the hybrid where you look to launch early but then have the B-hack when there are two strikes. Here's the quote. It means looking to drive your pitch in the air for the first two pitches of a plate appearance, but thinking contact with two strikes. Do not give away pitches by swinging at a pitch outside your zone in the first two strikes. Do not concede with two strikes. This is his version of selective aggression, and it's a lot like what Anthony Rizzo does up there, and this is the kind of thing they want more of their guys to do.
Well, it sounds good, and it's a good philosophy, but it sounds like a philosophy that only Ted Williams, Ken Griffey Jr., some of the very best players can function at. And again, at what level do you want this to function at? Is it okay if you hit 30, you drive in 100, you strike out 200 times? Is the batting average no longer a concerned issue? Is it a irrelevant and a number that is really extinct now in baseball?
I think we're talking about being able to make this kind of change in a smaller sample, which is obviously what the playoffs are. And if you look at these playoffs, as we all are, Mookie Betts is a terrific two-strike hitter. J.D. Martinez had a great two-strike little single to score Mookie Betts the other night. The Red Sox have had tremendous success with two strikes in the entire postseason.
But Matt, you're talking about the two best players in the American League.
Right, but I'm talking about the ability to adjust when the games matter like this. Right. That's what they want their guys to be able to do.
I understand, but it's for me, it's too simplistic, okay? If everybody could do this, they'd all be Mookie Betts. They'd all be the top hitters in the game. They would all be hitting. I mean, we don't ignore batting average when it comes to Betts or to Martinez. They both hit 330, 340, okay? That is the elite player in baseball.
Without a doubt. But okay. I'm just like, you got to.
Let's talk about the median player.
I will, but shouldn't you try to teach that median player your ideal philosophy?
Yeah, but it shouldn't be at this level.
Well, they have no choice, though.
No, but they do have a choice. All the organizations have a choice. This learning process should take place when they're coming up.
I totally agree.
They shouldn't get to the major leagues with 500 at-bats.
But here they are. But here they are. And even if they've had the years and the training down there, if you still have to teach them, then you might as well bring in the guy with the philosophy you want.
But you're saying that this is what we teach you. We expect you to be successful with this plan. But they really are still developing at this level. We're seeing player development still for Kyle Schwarber. We're seeing it still for Ian Happ.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know it, but we're still seeing player development for Wilson Contreras. Okay.
You know who else we're seeing it for, though? Cody Bellinger has adjusted and is a better two-strike hitter this year than he was last year, even though he's driving the ball less.
So adjustments have always been a part of the game, Matt. This is not a new metric. It's not a new hitting system.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a new voice that's coming in now and saying, you know, we want you to launch, but if you can't launch, hit the ball the other way. Well, for me, you know what? Hitting the ball the other way, if you're really good at hitting the ball the other way and driving it, you can do that in the first pitch too, okay? You can hit a double or a home run the other way if you're Anthony Rizzo or if you're Kyle Schwarber or if you're Brian, because you have the power and you have the baseball acumen to do it.
Well, you know, though, yes, but a lot of these guys are stubborn and they're told by front offices and their agents, no, keep trying to launch because that's how you get paid, etc. But sacrifice that ego just a little bit with two strikes. It's a nuanced message, which is the way Jed Hoyer described it, and some guys are better at giving the message across.
These guys aren't that good.
Well,
there's not enough of them that can do all of that.
Then get rid of them, and they'll get rid of a couple.
You might bring in someone that's just as unsuccessful.
Well, that's true. But you mean the hitting coach or the player?
No, the player.
Well, right.
Ultimately, it gets back to the player. It's like, dude, we don't. Okay, we're not getting Chili Davis. We don't like his message. We don't like how it's delivered. Okay, bye, Chili. You're gone. Okay, now it's back to you. You're the player. We're bringing in a more launch-friendly guy, a guy that you've had some experience with before. So in essence, Theo is saying, he's not saying, hey, Joe, your way didn't work. Chili, your way didn't work. It's, hey, Schwarber, hey, Bryant, hey, Rizzo, hey, Happ, we're bringing in a guy that you're familiar with, you've had success with. Now it's on you.
And I agree that I think both of those things can be true. You bring in a guy who espouses the philosophy you want.
Right.
And oh, by the way, if Kyle Schwarber is unable to learn the philosophy like we hoped he would, then go ahead and launch
What if they're as good as they're going to be?
Well, then try to get some value now bring in better guys.
I'm just saying. I mean, what if Schwarber, who is now who's a 240 hitter and hit, short career is about 228, but it's 240. And it's going to be 25 to 30, and it's going to be 60 to 80 RBI. What if that's just who he is?
Well, then you probably should have dealt him for Andrew Miller when you could have.
Yeah, but you didn't know that.
Yeah, no, you didn't. Well, that's why it's time to start thinking about actual talent or actual production versus talent.
So stop waiting for guys. My contention is, where do we get off saying, hey, we'll bring in a coach, we're going to broad brush it, and he's going to teach everybody this philosophy again, and everything's going to be hunky-dory? Or where does the player's responsibility come for manning up, being the best player you can be, working on it yourself in the offseason, watching Ben Zobrist in his approach, watching Anthony Rizzo in his approach, trying to adapt that and make that a part of who you are?
Well, I think that this is why it gets so difficult to judge hitting coaches, because it is anecdotal. It is about those relationships. It's about a hitter being ready to learn and change and the coach who's being ready to teach him. But you do get success stories like Kevin Long and Daniel Murphy and Curtis Granderson or Dwayne Murphy in Toronto with Jose Bautista. You do get success stories and moments. You just hope you can grab a couple of those.
Who is Ted Williams' hitting coach?
Ted Williams was his own hitting coach.
Who was Mickey Mantle's hitting coach?
I agree that the Cubs would be better if they had more of those guys.
Actually, until the early 1970s.
They didn't have any.
There were no hitting coaches.
I know.
Coaches.
Everybody just go to talk to Ted.
What they did, they stood around the batting cage, and Williams would stand there and look at his teammates, and he'd look at Jackie Jensen or Jimmy Pearsall, and he'd go, hey, that's not you. That's not you. And they would all help each other because they all knew each other's hitting swings and their approach. And that's who the hitting coaches were. The responsibility was totally that play.
But what if Ted's in a bad mood and doesn't feel like talking to Pearsall on a day? Then Pearsall gets no instruction? Pay a guy for it.
Yeah, unfortunately, Pearsall was considered a weak hitter. I think he was a 275 lifetime hitter. Now he would be, making $10 million a year.
Well, I bet, and he'd probably try to turn himself into Scooter Jeanette during some offseason.
Exactly. But again, the ultimate responsibility is on the player. Instruction is important, but you can't paint with the broad brush.
This is the kind of spirited conversation and disagreement that happens within a baseball organization, and it is both the player's responsibility and a hitting coach's responsibility, in my opinion. We got a lot of stuff
and
to
ours
do.
As well.
And ours, yes. And ours as well.
Owen, Ron, John, Tom, we're going to get to you coming out of the break. Matt wants to talk to you for sure. 312-644-6767. Text 67011. A lot more, including Ned Coletti, former GM of the Dodgers, to join us at the top of the hour. But you are king on Inside the Clubhouse.
And Bruce, you have to explain to me why Alan Nero is taking the approach he is taking. It's Inside the Clubhouse on The Score. Welcome back in on 670 The Score. Former Dodgers GM, longtime Cubs staffer, Ned Coletti. A local will come up at the top of the hour. Excited for that. Bruce, should we take a couple of calls here?
Absolutely, Matt.
Let's do it. This is Ron on the south side. Hello, Ron. You're on The Score.
Spiegel?
Yes, sir.
Baseball is still life.
Look at that. Long-time guy, Ron, on the south side. How about
long, real quick, guys, you all were talking about the bullpen. And, it's, you know, I guess when you look at those small market teams, we talked about Kansas City. The teams that Milwaukee, that you know, probably can't afford to sign those expensive starting pitchers. But maybe I'll hang up. I want you all maybe to compare this Milwaukee bullpen with Kansas City. That Kansas City bullpen, to me, was even probably even better than this one.
They were the ones that started all the trouble, Ron. Absolutely.
So he wants to compare the Milwaukee bullpen and the way it's used with Kansas City.
Yeah,
well,
they went
7, 8, and 9.
Right. You go back, and it was Herrera. Then it was Davis, and then you closed it out with Holland.
Right.
And they were monsters. That year, in 2015, when they won the World Series, they had the fewest starting pitching innings of any team in baseball. It was around 912 or 13.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of started the huge trend to, I mean, look, you can go back to the 70s and look at Sparky Anderson and the Big Red Machine. He went to the bullpen in the sixth inning as well. So it's nothing new. But the advent of many teams looking at their bullpen as being more important than the starting pitchers, that kind of evolved out of the Kansas City 2014-2015 American League champs, and then ultimately the world champs in 15.
And I like what he said about the financial necessity sometimes leading to the invention. The Royals couldn't keep Zach Greinke, so they traded him to Milwaukee for a haul. Meanwhile, down in Tampa, they couldn't afford to sign big pitchers, so they started to get creative. And now in Milwaukee, you know, they had a choice to spend big money on a starter. We all thought they would in the offseason. They didn't. They spent their money on Kane and then added salary with players during the
Kane, the trade for Yelich.
Right, but like added players during the year, but did not spend money and resources on starting pitching. They're doing it this way instead.
Matt, the problem is that we do not know how sustainable a bullpen from the fifth inning on is going to be in Major League Baseball because of attrition, because of 95 to 100 doesn't last more than a couple of years. And can you keep manufacturing, as I said to Theo Epstein, these robots coming out of the bullpen?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't like me alluding to them as robots, but of course they're individuals and they're all fine pitchers and people. But they're robots from the perspective of they're developing guys, two-pitch pitchers who have hellacious breaking balls, 95 to 100 miles an hour. How long can that last? How long can it be sustainable? Can you really look at your organization and say, we're going to continue to develop these types of power pitchers and difference makers when these guys burn out after 3 years?
I think that's very interesting. And what happens is, just like valuing one game and I'll worry about tomorrow, it's valuing 1 year and I'll worry about next year. Look at the Indians. Right. Andrew Miller is worn down. Cody Allen is worn down.
Right. The Brewers win today. They go on and they upset the Red Sox, win the World Series.
Maybe not in 2 years.
Is anybody picking them to win the National League next year?
Maybe next year.
Based on the same Hader, Knebel, Jeffress,
I'll say this,
and the same results from that bullpen.
I would think that 2020 Josh Hader might look a lot like 2018 Andrew Miller, which is good, but not as good as he was 2 years ago.
Right, exactly. I mean, the attrition is something. I mean, people are looking at this as a template for what baseball should be. But every smart general manager out there knows he still needs strong starting pitching, and that this isn't something that's sustainable for a long period of time.
You need guys who can do both, because you need that starting pitching over 162, Bruce, but come the playoffs, like we were talking about with Dempster, those starters better be ready to do what Nady Evaldi's doing, what Porcello's doing, and be used in relief.
You can alter the game, Matt, but you can't change it permanently.
This is Owen in Willowbrook on 670 The Score. Hello, Owen.
Hey, guys. You know, I hear your reaction talk about what my question was going to be, and not really the top starters, but are these managers devaluing what starters mean to a baseball team? You know, the thing that I really go back to, I know the Cubs won Game 7, but I had I could not disagree more with Baden when he pulled Hendricks. And what did he give up? No runs or one run in five innings in the seventh game or something?
Yeah, no, it was a brutal moment, and Hendricks had just walked a guy, and he brings in Lester with a man on. I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're not letting guys even try to get out of trouble anymore. And I'll tell you, to me, the greatest thing that I remember about the Sox running those four complete games. I love pitching and defense. And you know what? I actually think they're devaluing starters. Like the 3, 4, 5 guys aren't going to eat. Maybe these guys won't even get paid what they're going to
be. Well, you're right. I mean, that's a trend, and it's a great call. Thank you for that. Matt, they're making it dummy-proof. In other words, they're not allowing a second mistake, okay?
Yeah.
Because the metrics people are there saying, hey, bring in the fresh arm, you know, bring in the left-hander here, worry about the seventh and eighth inning and ninth inning if you get there, because if you don't keep the score down right now,
right,
we're going to lose that game anyway.
And doing it during the regular season drives me crazier than the playoffs, because if you don't give somebody a chance to learn how to get through the batting order the third time, then they'll never learn how to do it. They pull them before they even have a chance to do it.
But the metrics department wins by saying that the effectiveness the third time around is not going to be there.
And by the fact that they told him, don't even worry about trying to pace yourself and get a guy out three different ways. Just get him out the way you can the first and second
back
time.
Back to the caller's initial premise is that how does a pitcher develop if he doesn't have an opportunity to work out of his own jams?
Mm-hmm. 670 The Score is where you are. You know, having guys who can be flexible and do a bunch of things is obviously super helpful. For the White Sox, in the midst of their rebuild, I was interested to learn that they're encouraging one of their guys. They're encouraging Matt Davidson to take his experiment even further, aren't they?
They are. I wrote a story on 670thescore.com that you can pick up anytime you want right now. About Matt Davidson telling me that this winter his goal is to come back as both a relief pitcher and a hitter. Okay, we know he's had marginal success as a power hitter, certainly a number one pick by the Arizona Diamondbacks about 8 or 9 years ago. The strikeout has been his comeuppance most of the time. Strikes out an awful lot, but came in 3 different games this year, Matt, and
he looked great. It was fun.
He looked like a pitcher.
Yeah, well, he is a pitcher.
Right. In high school, he was a pitcher, gave it up to become a position player when he was drafted. But he told me that he's going to work hard at the White Sox facility in spring training, where he lives near Glendale, Arizona, and prove to Rick Hahn and to Kenny Williams and to Rick Renteria and Don Cooper that he can come in and be a viable option as a bullpen guy as well as a position player in 2019.
What a valuable roster piece that would be to have. And good for him for chasing it, and you might as well allow it if you're the White Sox.
You know, he throws 92. It's not hard for him to throw 92. He's got to work on command. He's got to work on getting his body in a pitcher's shape to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's got to consistently throw strikes and show the White Sox hierarchy that, you know, okay, it's not Shohei Ohtani, but it's our version of a different type of two-way player.
I happened to be there in Texas on the night that he came in relief against the Rangers. And the look on his face and everybody else's face on that field when he struck out the final guy with a breaking ball and walked, you know, confidently off the mound, which is like, what the heck was
Yeah, it was
that?
A great moment
yeah.
in a season that didn't have a ton of them for the White Sox, it was. And he's a cool guy. He's interesting. And the White Sox have green-lighted his attempt to do it. They're not saying we demand you to do it. They're not saying we expect you to do it. but they have okayed him going about it.
It is 670 The Score. We are inside the clubhouse. He is Bruce Levine. I'm Matt Spiegel. Ned Coletti will join us to talk about the Dodgers and the Brewers Game 7 and more next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.